It's Thursday, the 7th of April, 2016. Happy birthday to Thurl Bailey. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Trev J. Evans 3. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Trev J. Evans 3 and sponsor the podcast for a day, it's straightforward. Just leave a review on iTunes and you can be a sponsor for one individual episode. Or if you like Trev J. Evans, you can sponsor about five in a row because he just left five fantastic reviews in a row. So thank you for that, Trev. If you are watching this show live, which you can always do for each show on YouTube, you can contact me and interact with the show as it goes to air by tweeting at me at redrock_Beeble. You can see that Twitter handle underneath my face on the screen at the moment. You can tweet me at any time about anything, of course, but live interaction on the show, we can get that happening as we go ahead. We've got a fair bit to talk about today, as per usual. Big games on Wednesday, preview for Thursday, and give maybe 2 minutes of my time discussing the Sam Hinkie news from today, because it was something that it bothered me a little bit. It was a weird situation, but there's a very big divide in the NBA community about Sam Hinkie. But before we get into that,
let's get to it.
That's all I needed. Now let's talk Sam Hinkie. So as you know, or you most likely know, Sam Hinkie resigned from his position as the GM of the Philadelphia 76ers today. To say he resigned is true in a literal sense. To say that he felt like he needed to resign, I think is more accurate, with the Sixers bringing in Brian Colangelo to be the GM, to work with and under his dad, Jerry Colangelo. And the Sixers apparently wanted Sam Hinkie to stay, but to take on a lesser role. And honestly, if Jerry Colangelo is going to have Brian Colangelo there with him, father and son combination working, what sort of input is Hinkie going to have? I understand why he resigned. I completely disagree with what the Sixers are doing at the moment. You've committed to this for 3 years, and people act like the Philadelphia 76ers have been tanking for 10 years. Like, they're not the Kings, they're not the Timberwolves, who have been brutally bad for years and years and years and years in a row, whilst even attempting to be mediocre, and they still can't even get that right. The Kings and the Wolves haven't really even attempted to be good. They've attempted to be mediocre, and they haven't even been able to do that correctly. The Sixers, it's been a three-year situation. Hinkie came in after the Andrew Bynum trade and saw that they were out assets, they were out first-round picks, and the team was not looking good. So he made moves, and I think most of the moves, trade-wise, you can't argue with. Now, a lot of people will look at it and say, well, he should have picked a point guard. He had no point guards on the team, and I agree with that. He should have re-signed Ish Smith at the end of last season. Smith was great for the development of Nerlens Noel down the stretch last year. He should have been re-signed. Obviously, they got him back, and it cost two draft picks for it. He should have been re-signed at the end of last season. I've got no doubt of that, and that was something that I said at the time. I got into some discussions with people today about picking Jahlil Okafor at number three, that being the wrong pick. But I think you unanimously hear from NBA people that you always take the best available player. It doesn't matter regarding fit. You don't reach for a guy that you think is not in that same level. So Emmanuel Mudiay could have gone. In hindsight, obviously, Kristaps Porzingis would have been the guy there, but there's rumors coming out afterwards that Porzingis didn't want to play there, and the Sixers were definitely considering him at that spot. But when you think Okafor is that much better of a talent than guys like Mudiay or Campaign behind him, and obviously way too high for Campaign, you take the best option, because you never know what's going to happen. You never know how things are going to pan out. You could have yourself a big stack of trade assets to move on from. You never know if Embiid's going to come back healthy. You never know if Saric is going to be there. You never know if Noel's going to stay healthy. So I think, in general, picking the best player available in the NBA is the best way to go. In fantasy, I'm very much not a big pick the best player available, but that's a different situation. Anyway, so he made these decisions. There was talk he wasn't aggressive enough in free agency, and he probably should have taken a few more flyers on guys. I saw it tweeted out today. He should have thrown a bit of money at Kent Bazemore and try and get him across in a couple of seasons ago. Just take some chances on some young players and see how they work out. But I'll also counter that and say he did. He did take chances on some young players. Isaiah Cannon, who has proved he can be a decent backup guy who can hit a lot of threes, which is important in the league. Bob Cove, Robert Covington out of nowhere. Houston discarded him, and he's looked like he can be a genuine rotation piece. There are other ones who haven't worked out as well, and if you heard Sam Hinkie on Zach Lowe's podcast talking about, say, a guy like Furkan Aldemir, that didn't work out. There's lots of things that haven't worked out, but the majority of what he was doing and the way that he was approaching it, I think was fine and what needed to be done, and it's what the team wanted him to do. That's the other thing. The team wanted him to do this, and then they've gone ahead and said, we're not doing this anymore because we're getting a lot of negative feedback. That's basically what it comes down to. People are hating it. People are hating it. But what could happen this year is the Sixers could have, they've got at least one top four pick, maybe two top four picks. They could have four first round draft choices. They should have Embiid playing. They should have Saric coming over as well. So we're talking about an infusion of potentially four lottery picks playing this season. Embiid, Saric, and their own pick, and possibly the Lakers pick. Yeah, we could be talking about those sort of players coming in, and that, you know, added to Noel and Okafor, it could be really interesting. And people will talk about, he had the Rookie of the Year and he traded him away. Yep. Well, I think at this point we know that Carter Williams is not good, and he could get the fourth pick in the draft out of that Michael Carter Williams trade, which, you know, the player might not be as good as Carter Williams, but Carter Williams isn't good at this point. Anyway, what I wanted to say, I was just really disappointed in the Sixers not fulfilling this. Give it 12 more months. The Sixers were going to be more aggressive in free agency because it's all about timing when you're going to start becoming aggressive in free agency. You get these two lottery picks. You get Saric, you get Embiid, you get Noel, you get Okafor, you get Bob. You've got a core of players coming together, and you get some young guys to come across, make some restricted free agency offers, get some guys over, pay some extra money in free agency, because you can lead this young group. I reckon they would have got someone to come across, and the team would have started to grow in the next year or two and really started to push to become a very good team. The process, and I didn't want to use that term, the process, but what he was doing, I think, was the correct way to do it. He gets the number one pick last year. He gets Karl Anthony Towns. He's a genius. Absolute genius. Didn't fall his way. And that's what happens sometimes. But the way that they were going about it was the right way to do it, I think. And it hasn't worked out ideally. But that could all happen in the next 12 months. And then if you hear the credit going towards the Colangelos, I think that's obviously selling what Hinkie did short. Let me know your thoughts on it. I know that plenty of you are going to disagree with me and plenty of you are going to agree with me. But I'm not a massive fan of the change in direction, the change of backing from the ownership group towards Hinkie that made him make this decision. And obviously not a real people person, Sam Hinkie. And that's robbed a lot of people the wrong way as well. But he has, I would have loved to have seen it work out perfectly. And it really, not perfectly. I would love to see it worked out well. And it still very well could work out well, except that Hinkie won't be there in an official capacity to see it happen. It was very interesting news to see it come out today. Anyway, let's get into some fantasy stuff and let's talk monstrous line of the night. We're going to go to the Charlotte Hornets and talk about Kemba Walker, who played 35 minutes. He does love going to New York. 34-5, 7 triples, 2 assists, 2 steals, 5 rebounds, and 11 of 18 shooting. Kemba Walker has been a massive surprise this year. He's ranked inside the top 20. He's averaging over 20 points for the first time in his career. He's shooting at 43%, which doesn't seem great, but when he was a 39% shooter the previous two seasons, it's been a phenomenal increase. Great steals, low turnovers, 2.3 triples per game. He's hitting his threes at 38% when he was at 30 last year, and a lot of that is something that we hypothesized on the Charlotte Hornets preview at the start of the season, that with better players around him, like a Nick Batum, he won't be forced into taking terrible shots, and he'll be a little bit more open. He won't have to take those late shot clock shots with someone else out there who can actually shoot. And Jeremy Lin's another one of those guys who's not as good a shooter, but you put him, put Batum there, and start spreading things out, and it's worked really well in Kemba Walker's favor. He's been fantastic this year. I've always been a big Kemba Walker fan, and especially for fantasy, and it's served me pretty well this year because I drafted him in quite a few leagues, and he's turned out quite nicely. So Kemba Walker is the monstrous line of the night. The waiver wire line of the night, we're going with JJ Barea in Dallas. I've talked about JJ Barea plenty. There's no reason that he shouldn't be able to find a spot on your championship week roster. He's played 37 minutes here, 27-5-8, 4 triples. The red-hot shooting continues from Barea, 10 of 16 from the field. It's obviously not sustainable, and Darren Williams could come back at any time. But inside the last 2 weeks, Barea is a top 30 player. He is in those seven games, averaging 22 points a game, three triples, 6.3 assists on 53% shooting, which comes from 17 attempts per game. And that is such a massive, massive bump to that category. He's not turning the ball over much. He's been tremendous. And you should have been owning Barea for a while. And he's looking fantastic at this point of the year. Does this translate to anything for the future? I would say absolutely not. The Mavericks are going to have an interesting spot, though, with Williams, who I would say is likely to decline his player option. Does he come back? Who do they get in at point guard? The Mavericks are a team that's poised to fall off exceptionally hard at some point coming up in the next couple of years, and they are devoid of real assets outside of, say, Justin Anderson and to a lesser extent, Dwight Powell. There is just nothing much there, especially with Chandler Parsons potentially opting out and leaving. Wes Matthews already being 30, Dirk being 174. There's not a lot there to really look at the future. But anyway, Barea playing well now, and someone who you obviously have to be considering really, really intently, or even more than that, you should be owning him. Another guy you should be owning is the young gun of the night, and that is Timmy Frazier in New Orleans. He played 34 minutes off the bench, 18-5-6 with two steals, a block, and a three. The Pelicans trotted out their 40th different starting lineup in this game, not really understanding why we're going to move Tim Frazier back to the bench. He's clearly the best player on this team to me at this point in the season and continues to put up great fantasy numbers, and he should be owned absolutely everywhere. He would have been able to get pretty good odds for me if you would have said over the last month of the season, will Tim Frazier be a top 50 player, considering he wasn't even on a team. I would have said, cool, you're on, let's go for it. But he has been tremendous in that last month, averaging 14 points, 4 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 1.5 steals, 0.8 threes, 50% and 83 from the line, putting up tremendous numbers. And the fact that he's 83% from the line in the last month, he was 48% from the line last season. That's obviously not who he is, but it's still a huge jump, and his shooting's been so much more efficient with a bunch of crap around him on the court as well, and that's got to be factored into it too. So Timmy Frazier, alongside JJ Barea, these are guys that have to be owned at this point in the season if you are still alive and kicking and you're looking to take home a championship. I was going to do the dud of the night tonight, but when I'm looking at it, you know, I'd like to have a cutoff of 70% ownership with players for the dud of the night. There was no one I really wanted to give it to. D'Angelo Russell was a guy who looked maybe that he'd get it. Dirk Nowitzki wasn't awesome, but none of them were really terrible. So I'm going to give the dud of the night a bit of a pass tonight. Let's talk about the perfect DFS lineup from Wednesday's games. At point guard, JJ Barea put up 43 points and Isaiah Thomas dropped 48.8. Brad Beal went for 39.1 and Jim Harden, only the 38 for Jim, but he fitted in nicely with the rest of the roster there for that perfect lineup. El-Farouq Aminu traded big game for small game, and he went big again here, 48.7, while Mo Harkless continues to play really well, 34 for Mo. Tom Robinson, 40 points, continuing to rack up massive numbers, and I reckon he'll do it for most of the rest of the season, while Julius Randle grabbed a huge amount of rebounds to get 32.5. And the Thunder. Now, yesterday, there was a tweet that came out talking about how wasn't a tweet, it was fact, but I think it was Matt Moore tweeted it out saying that the Thunder had now locked in the third seed. They couldn't go higher, they couldn't go lower. And I replied back to that and retweeted it saying, look for some rest coming for the Thunder players. And someone, I don't remember who it was, definitely not hanging shit on this person, said, oh, the coach has come out and said they're not going to be resting. Cool, the coach said they're not going to be resting. Turns out, rest everyone. The point I'm getting to is Enes Kanter put up an absolute monster of a line, went for 61.5 points. And I've talked about Kanter a lot this year, and when he gets an opportunity to start, he is a top 25 fantasy player. And we saw it today, an absolute monster scoring, rebounding percentages. Huge night from him. That total would have given you 385.6. Just something to always chew on when you think about Enes Kanter and what he can actually do if he is given that opportunity. All right. We're going to take a quick break now for a word from our sponsor, which today is Loot Crate. And as you know, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and each month you get 6 to 8 items delivered to your house, to your home, to your post office box, and you don't have to pick them. They're apparel, licensed gear, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, more. You get t-shirts, there's pins. Each month there's a different theme that Loot Crate runs. They choose all the items that fit within that theme and send them to you. Each month you have until the 19th to subscribe and get that month's box. After that, that box is gone. The exclusive items are done. You're not getting them again. If you're interested in Loot Crate and you are a nerd and a geek just like I am, head to lootcrate.com/redrock. That's the website that tells them that you came from listening to this podcast. And then if you want to save $3 off any new subscription, use the promo code REDROCK as well, which is one word. It's not any easier than that. April's theme for the box service for Loot Crate is Quest. So we're talking about things like Labyrinth, Harry Potter, Vikings, Uncharted 4. You've got exclusive items in there, t-shirts, pins, lots of stuff in there. So make sure you are checking out Loot Crate. But remember, it's lootcrate.com/redrock and use that coupon code REDROCK as well to save yourself $3 on any new subscription. Also, yeah, it does make a, as Joey was talking about the other day on the podcast, makes a great gift idea for someone who is a nerd, a geek, a gamer. And you can get something sent to their house every month for 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is, any sort of subscription length that you pick. And it makes a pretty nice present for someone. Definitely something a little bit out of the box, no pun intended. All right, we're going to look at the games now in a little bit of extra detail. There were 8 games on Wednesday, so we'll bring that up on the screen for you guys who are watching along on the video. Let's put that up there. There we go. Fantastic. All right, the first game of the night, it was the Brooklyn Nets and the Washington Wizards. The Wizards with a big win, but as you'll see, the theme throughout the night is stars were out. We already know that Brook Lopez and Thad Young are out for the Nets. John Wall sat this one out as well with some knee soreness. We'll start with the Nets. I really like what we saw from Chris McCullough here. 25 minutes for McCullough, 10-3, but he hit a three. He had an assist. He had 5 steals and he had a block. So really good defensive numbers. The fact that he can hit a three is important too. And he is going to be a very interesting player for me moving forward in the future. Tom Robinson, beasting. 31 minutes for Robinson. Remember, he was a top 5 pick a couple of years ago and has really struggled ever since. 23-10-4 on 10 of 16 shooting. Now, he is going to hurt your free throws. He went 3 of 5 from the free throw line, but you want points, you want rebounds, you want field goal percentage, you want some blocks, not many, but some. Robinson's going to be your guy. They decided not to start Henry Sims in this one. They went small. They started Robinson at center. They put Bojan Bogdanovic at power forward. That didn't work out too well. Bogdanovic played 21 minutes and had 4 points on 2 of 12 shooting. His luster has gone in your standard leagues, despite so many players being out. Shane Larkin, another nice night. Only 9 points, but again, that's not why you want Shane Larkin. 7 rebounds, 8 assists, 1 block, doing it in the other areas. Wayne Ellington had a hot night, 14 points with 4 rebounds, including 4 triples. That means he'll score about 14 combined for the rest of the season, while Henry Sims moved back to a bench role and went 8-7 in 20 minutes with a steal and a block. If they're going to continue using him off the bench, then his appeal obviously shrinks pretty dramatically. Sean Kilpatrick, 15 points, nothing else. He is legitimately like Swaggy P at the moment. These are Nick Young specials. Double-digit points, single figures, not even single digits, just ones in all the other categories. That is all he does. Markel Brown went 13 points with 2 assists, and Don Sloan chimed in with 5 dimes in his 17 minutes. Rondo Hollis-Jefferson, 24 minutes for him, 7-3-3 with a steal and a 3. You've probably worked out already that Hollis-Jefferson's not a 12 or a 14-team league guy at this point. Brad Beal, a big night from him, 25-3-5, 3 triples, a steal and a block on ridiculous 11 of 15 shooting. That sort of happens when you play the Nets, so a big game from Brad. Marcin Gortat didn't have to play the 30 minutes, which I so ache for him to do, but 16-12 with 4 blocks will get it done for me in 25 minutes. Ramon Sessions started in place of Wall, and if Wall misses any time, then Sessions is going to be a great DFS and seasonal option. 18-3-13, 2 triples for Sessions. Efficient shooting, he's going to be a great source of assists and some scoring moving forward. With Wally out, Garrett Temple played 29 minutes, went 10-6-6 and had 3 steals and 2 triples. I'm not getting sucked into Garrett Temple, while Otto Porter went 15-6-3 with a couple of blocks in his 29. And Markeith struggled, 9-7 in 28 minutes. Poor shooting, 4 of 13, but I'm definitely not giving up on Markeith Morris. There's more to come from him. The next game, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Indiana Pacers. Speaking about rests, LeBron sat this one out to sit his ass on the ground and take a rest. Ty Lawson was out with an infection for the Pacers. Let's look at the Cavs. Kyrie, no LeBron, so he went 26-2-6, a 3, 3 steals and a block. Really efficient shooting, huge numbers from Kyrie. And Kevin Love played just the 19 minutes in this one, but 23 points in 19 minutes with 3 triples and 5 rebounds. Not a great shooting night, but a 10 of 10 night from the line. And both of those guys are always going to put up the bigger numbers when LeBron is out. And I highlighted that the other day, that when these One of these guys sits out, the other two put up big numbers. Now, the Cavs were able to spread their rotation out a little bit here with LeBron out. Tristan Thompson only got 22 minutes, 9-5. Richard Jefferson had 10-4 in his 31 minutes, and Channing Frye hit a couple of triples in 21 minutes too. Overall, from a fantasy point of view, there's not a lot to really look at and take away. I'll take away that Iman Shumpert is going to struggle to ever be even a 16-team league guy. He played 35 minutes with LeBron out and had 4-3-1. He'll have the occasional explosion, but it won't be enough to really justify any sort of long-term ownership. J.R. Smith, after a couple of hot nights, had 10 points and 2 assists, so he dropped way off, which has been the pattern of what he's been able to do pretty much all season. For the Pacers, Solomon Hill. 31 minutes for Solo, 15-5, 3 threes, 3 steals, a block, that is an aberration, do not rely upon that. Paul George went 29-5 with 4 triples, and he hit 10 of 17 from the field, that is also an aberration, the shooting percentage, don't expect Paul George to do that often. CJ Miles dropped another 6 triples for 21 points in 24 minutes, great threes, stream, punt play, but that's really about it. Monte Ellis, 13-6-8, yeah, fine, and Georgia Hill, 9-4-5. 32 minutes. I like George Hill, but his fantasy value has been kaput about the last 2 or 3 months, and you can probably move on from him in most spots just to get some extra games or some hot performers. I would rather have probably Tim Frazier over George Hill. I would rather have JJ Barea over George Hill at this point, absolutely no doubt in my mind. Miles Turner played 5 minutes in this one. He accumulated 3 fouls and didn't put up any stats. Lavoie Allen played just 21 minutes, and the Pacers were able to go a little bit smaller by getting Solomon Hill out there in a game that they won pretty comfortably against the LeBron-less Cavs. This is, again, the problem with playing at this time of the year in fantasy is that bullshit just happens all over the place, and this goes for seasonal and DFS leagues as well. The Detroit Pistons and the Orlando Magic. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope bounced back after a really piss-poor game when he was the dud of the night last night. 36 minutes for KCP, 18-3-1, 3 steals and 2 triples on 7 of 10 shooting. That's as unrealistic as his 1 of 2 of 6 performance from the other night. Don't rely too much upon that happening all that often, but he's still better than what he was yesterday. Toby Harris in his return to Orlando, 13-7-2 with 2 triples and a steal. Yeah, it's all right. It's not great. While Reg Jackson went 24-4-4 with a block and a 3. Andre Drummond played 33 minutes, went 13-16, had 4 blocks, had a steal. A pretty decent night from Drummond. And Reggie Bullock came out of nowhere for a 13-3-6 performance. 3 threes, a steal, and a block. And actually, one of the takeaways for me from this season for the Pistons has been that Bullock can actually play, because we hardly saw anything of him in Los Angeles or in Phoenix, but there have been opportunities for him this season where he's shown that he can score and he can play. And that's good for this team who, you know, doesn't have great wings. They've got decent wings, they're not great wings. And maybe he can develop into a real solid sort of backup player for them. Stan Johnson in this one, it was a DMP CD, so that's interesting that he's obviously not a standard league guy at this point. Marcus Morris, 9-3-4 with 3 steals, not his best performance, and not much else there happening for the Pistons. On to the Magic, Lord Alfred Payton played 32 minutes and went 17-2-5 with 2 steals and a block. Big night from Payton. And Nick Vucevic continues to play off the bench, just get him into the starting lineup, Skiles. I'm not really sure what's happening here. 15-13, 2 steals and a block for Vucevic, so he continues to put up big numbers, as does Scott Skiles' boyfriend, Andrew Nicholson. 20 minutes for Nicholson, 14-6, 2 triples, efficient shooting. He is a great points, probably threes, rebounds, and field goal percentage stream at this point, even getting down to 12-team leagues. Despite his limited minutes, he's putting up numbers. Vic Oladipo, 16-4-3, a triple one, pretty good night there, and Evan Fournier had 19 points to lead the team in scoring. Aaron Gordon was atrocious, 6-6-4, he had a block, he was 3 of 10 from the field, he missed both of his free throws. He has not been great over these last couple of months. And talking about Nick Vucevic coming off the bench, Dwayne Dedmon started and played 5 minutes. I'm never going to understand just decisions like that. It just makes no sense whatsoever. Why play the guy 4 minutes at all? Why have him start the game unless he's an elite opening tip winner, which I don't think Dwayne Dedmon is. I'll have to look up the numbers. It is very strange to me to have that sort of rotation. You know, I'm very much against stupidity in that sort of sense. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics get the victory. Talked about Frazier again. He moved back to the bench. Speaking of stupidity, I don't understand that. But there's a value everywhere on this Pelicans roster. No Norris Cole again. No Ryan Anderson again. We're probably not seeing them again this year. James Ennis, 29 minutes for Ennis. 13-4-1, 2 steals, 2 threes. Like it. Tone Douglas, 19-7-3 with two triples on 7 of 13 shooting. We haven't seen much efficiency from Tone all that often lately, but he's going to have an okay role. I would rather have Frazier over him, but he's going to have value. Jordy Hamilton on the bench again, 28 minutes, 14-6 with two threes and an assist. You can look at him in 12-team leagues. Alexey Ajinsa remains starting. Foul trouble limited him to just 22 minutes, but 10-8-3 is enough for 12-team leagues, I think. Lukey Babbitt back to the bench. At least he did play the 33 minutes, 16-8-4 with two threes. At this point for DFS plays, aside from Frazier, it's tough to really get a grasp on many of these Pelicans guys. They all remain good tournament options. Douglas, Ennis, Hamilton, Ajinsa, Babbitt. But in a game here where Ajinsa played 22 minutes and Babbitt played 33, you could easily see that flipping in the next game. It's real tough to know what Gentry's going to do. Gentry doesn't even know what he's doing half the time. Omer Asik went from a DNP CD back to a starter, played 14 minutes and went 2-4, while Dante Cunningham missed all six of his shots for 2 points in 31 minutes. Asik, Cunningham, and Perkins, I'd be happy if they combined for about 10 minutes for the entire game and gave the rest of the minutes to Frazier, Ennis, Douglas, Hamilton, Ajinsa, and Babbitt. They're the guys I want to see out there on the court, not this other offensively challenged crap like Asik, Cunningham, and Perkins. For the Celtics, Isaiah Thomas, 32-4-8, three triples, two steals, big game for him. And Marcus Smart did what Marcus Smart can do. Now, he only scored 11 points. He had hit a three, but four rebounds, four assists, two steals, two blocks. This is why I think Marcus Smart could be in line for a pretty big bump next season, or a decent bump, and be a real fantasy player, because I've talked about him before, a 15-5-5 guy, a two steals, two threes player as well. He can do a lot of different things. I'm really excited to see Marcus Smart evolve. Avery Bradley had a good night, 13-6-3 with three steals. And let's look in the front court, because that's where the intrigue is. 21 minutes for Jared Sullinger, 8-6-2. Amir Johnson, 6-7-2, with two blocks in 25. Jonas Jerebko played 17 minutes for 6-5. Kelly Olynyk played 11 minutes for seven points. It's just a mess. It's really tough to hold these guys. Yeah, with these last couple of days left of the season, I'd be streaming them through when they play, when they don't, and getting other guys in. There's no one that's a must hold out of those guys. Jay Crowder, 14-3, blocked two shots, hit two threes. A pretty good night from Jay. The Charlotte Hornets and the New York Knicks. Al Jefferson is alive. Now, he is playing a Knicks team, which is brutal. He played 29 minutes. Jefferson, 24-8, a couple of steals on 11 of 21 shooting. That's a lot of shots for Al Jefferson. I'm not putting massive faith into him, but you can definitely take an experimental plug and play and see if it happens again. He's been wildly inconsistent. He hasn't been able to do really much of anything. Not buying into it too much. There was no Nick Batum in this one. They started Frank Kaminsky instead of Jeremy Lin, and he played 24 minutes. Kaminsky went 16-4-3, had a steal, had a couple of threes, and he has been solid. Without being spectacular this year, solid, and really that sort of 14-16 team league deep, he's been okay. Marv Williams, 13-3-2, two steals, a three. Yeah, that's just so-so, while Courtney Lee went 4-5-6. And Cody Zeller struggled with some fouls, three fouls in his 19 minutes, 6-5, not his best night, but I've talked about him plenty. I love him as a player, don't love him as a fantasy guy. Jeremy Lin struggled, 33 minutes, so that's awesome, but 6 points, both from three, five rebounds and three assists. If Batum misses again, I would think that Lin would have a much better game next time. The New York Knicks, Robin Lopez played 35 minutes, went 8-7-3, had a steal, had two blocks, still played 35 minutes, probably didn't need to. Carmelo Anthony, so Kurt Rambis' resting policy not working all that well in this one, 38 minutes for Melo, 15-6-7 with a steal and two blocks. Well, Sasha Vujicic, the future of the franchise, Sasha Vujicic played 25 minutes, 16-4-2 with four threes, and even though you're giving the veterans all these minutes, they lost again by double digits. So Kurt Rambis is an atrocity. Jerian Grant did start, so that's one thing. He only played 23 minutes, so he started all these games. He hit 5 of 7 shots and can't get to 30 minutes. 14-2-3 with a steal and a 3. If it was anyone else who had any modicum of sense, I'd go, Grant, you got to own him because he's going to play 30 minutes. He's going to put up big numbers. Well, he'll put up big numbers in 23 minutes, but it's just not quite enough, and it's all because of the meddling of Kurt Rambis. Langston Galloway, 10-3-3 with two steals and two threes. Surely play this guy over Vucic. I don't understand what's happening. Or Derek Williams played and started again in place of Kristaps. Thank you, Stephen. 17-10 for Williams in 32 minutes. A three and an assist. It's his best game since Porzingis has been out. He's not a must-own player by any stretch, but he does have value, especially for 14 teamers. Kevin Serafin was down to 3 minutes because we had to give all those minutes to Anthony, Lopez, and Vujicic. Kylo Quinn played just 13, and Clay Anthony Early got 11 minutes only. Aaron Aflalo got another 30 off the bench, so that's great. 11 points with 5 assists and 2 triples, and this team is a disgrace. I feel sorry for Knicks fans. I feel sorry for anyone who's invested in the New York Knicks from a fan perspective, because Phil Jackson is struggling, Kurt Rambis is horrible, and I read a great thing today. I don't remember where I read it. I wish I did. That said that I think it was on Ball Don't Lie, and that the Knicks fans should be hoping, that James Dolan actually interferes here and gets rid of Phil Jackson and doesn't allow this Kurt Rambis hire, because there is no way that this points in a good direction. And Jackson just seems delusional with some of his thought processes on Rambis. Literally the worst coach in NBA history. Houston at Dallas. Horrible, horrible, horrible loss for the Rockets. Jim Harden did what he could do. 44 minutes, 26, 5, and 4. 4 threes, a steal, 2 blocks. Just wasn't enough. Mick Beasley played 21 minutes, 15 and 3. He's a points guy. That's what he's going to give you. Not going to be much in the other areas. And the minutes are still really up and down. Now, Dwight Howard almost took 10 shots. He took 9. 14 and 16 with a block. One of his best games in probably the last 2 weeks. And coming back, he missed all 4 of his free throws. Coming sort of back into more relevancy, but he should be owned if you've owned him all the way through. Trevor Reza, 9, 3 and 5 with 2 steals. Pat Bev went 9, 5 and 3. And Donatas Motiejunas went from starting to not playing at all. KJ McDaniels took his spot. McDaniels played 15 minutes, had 4 points, 2 assists and a steal. He's not going to be touching fantasy relevancy until he gets to 25 minutes or so. He was a real darling last year in Philadelphia with his ability to block shots at a huge rate, but just not getting enough playing time at this point, and looks to have regressed somewhat too. The Mavericks, another 4 triples for Wes Matthews, 41 minutes there, 16 points, 6 rebounds and 3 steals. Definitely looking a lot better these last couple of weeks. Salah Mejri back to 16 minutes, 4 and 5 with 3 blocks. Interesting. Zaza Pachulia got another start, 8, 2 and 3 in 24 minutes with 2 steals. None of these guys are 12-team league players, while Dave Lee had 8 and 8 in his 20 minutes. Dirk, 7 and 6, not a good night from Nowitzki. And Justin Anderson started, but only played the 20 minutes here. He was 5-3-2 with a block. Really just need him to get to 30 more often than not, but it might be tough for that to happen. Devin Harris, 10-4 with 2 triples in his 31 minutes, while Ray Felton's back to a bench role and played just 18 minutes, and that's what they should be doing. They should be getting Anderson out there and playing him more often. You know, the guys you want to look at, obviously you're adding Barea, Mejri, Pachulia, Dwight Powell, none of these guys are your standard league ads. Justin Anderson's really on the borderline of it. David Lee's not in consideration. So it's just Barea that you're really looking to add in those standard formats. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Portland Trailblazers. There was no Serge Ibaka, no Andre Robertson, no Kevin Durant, no Russ Westbrook. So the Thunder trotted out a starting lineup of Randy Foy, Steve Adams, Anthony Morrow, Deion Waiters, and Enes Kanter. Let's start with Kanter, who was 33-20. He had a triple one. He was 13 of 18 from the field. He was 6 of 7 from the free throw line. He was absolutely incredible. He grabbed 9 offensive rebounds. He is close to the best offensive rebounder in the league. I need to look at his offensive rebounding percentage, actually, if you can bear with me while I bring it up, because I'm really interested in that. Actually, let's have a look at the leaders in offensive rebound percentage. I reckon he'd have to be pretty bloody close to that. Where are we? Oh, this is great. I should look this up before the show. What didn't I think of it? I know that the leader in terms of total offensive rebounds this season is Andre Drummond, and he's 120 clear of the next place guy. Enes Kanter comes in 6th in offensive rebound total for the season, but we know that he's playing as a backup. You know, 2 is Tristan Thompson, DeAndre Jordan, Robin Lopez, Zaza Pachulia, then Enes Kanter. Let's see if we can find the offensive rebound percentage. Where is that? Offensive rebound percentage. Number 1, Enes Kanter, 16.6. So he's rebounding 16.6 of available rebounds on the offensive end. Drummond at 2, Fareed, Davis, Valanciunas, Pachulia, Thompson, Rob Lopez, Hassan Whiteside, and Rudy Gobert rounding out the top 10. So he is an absolute animal on the offensive glass, Enes Kanter. He is an efficient scoring machine, as we saw here. The defense is a real concern, absolutely. And I've got no doubt about that. But I do think that his offense, to a degree, should allow him to play more than he currently is. Steve Adams is decent, he's good, but Kanter can be amazing. He's averaging a double-double in the last month, Kanter, off the bench. 23 minutes, 16.5 points, 10.5 rebounds, 0.6 steals, half a block on 63 and 88. These are top 50 numbers for a guy playing 23 minutes a game. He is, for the season, in if you look at the fantasy value on Basketball Monsters per 36 minutes, he is the 23rd ranked player. He is ranked 7th in per 36 minute value. So his per 36 numbers in the last month, 26 and 16, a steal, half a block, and those percentages are enormous. He, I know I'm probably the biggest Enes Kanter fan out there. I don't know if I'm really a fan, but I know his defense is terrible. I'm aware of that. But what he does offensively is such a weapon. That offensive rebound that he does is such a massive, massive weapon that you have to consider using him more, I think, as a coaching staff. Yeah, look, his defensive metrics are all terrible. Negative box score, plus minuses, all across his whole career. His defensive win shares are 2 this season. His offensive, 5.6. So his win shares are pretty good as it is, but he's obviously dwarfed by what he can do offensively based on defensively. But his ability to do some things is just incredible. And if we knew that he was going to start more games down the stretch, he would be an amazing DFS play. Dion Waiters got hot, 25-4-1, 3 steals and a triple. And Randy Foy made the start, which just shits me to tears. He started over campaign. 37 minutes for Foy, 11-3-4 with a 3 and a steal, while Payne played 31 minutes and went 10-1-6 with a steal and a 3 as well. So at least Payne got out there. Steve Adams, 9-12 in his 23 minutes. Josh Huestis played 21 minutes, 6-6 with 2 triples, a steal and a block. Very, very interesting. Now, Huestis is probably not going to develop into anything in Oklahoma City, but he's played a couple of games this year where he's actually been okay and been able to do a couple of things, which is, we never saw him at all, basically, for the first 3 months of the season. Interesting to see him out there. Anthony Morrow hit 3 points. No, he didn't. He had 3 triples in his 31 minutes for 19 points. He doesn't do much else apart from shoot threes, but that can be useful if we get another situation like this. The Blazers get the victory. El-Farouq Aminu, 27-6-5, 3 threes, 3 steals, 1 block. Up and down, but really coming on strong at the end. Mo Harkless also, 14-5. He had a 3, 2 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks. He has to be owned everywhere to me, Harkless. 28 minutes here. He's a starter. He's been playing these minutes. He should have been playing them all season. Loving what I'm seeing from Mo. CJ McCollum, 26, including 4 triples. And Dame Lillard, really, really struggling. 2 of 13 from the field. 11-3-9 with 2 triples and a block. And he is really, for as much as he would have gotten some people to their championship matchup, he is literally hurting teams at the moment because he is really struggling. He is ranked 126th over the last 2 weeks. Only 18.8 points, shooting 32% from the field. In fact, he's under 37% in the last month. He's not getting as many. His assists are slightly down as well, 6.6 over the last couple of weeks. He doesn't get steals. He doesn't block shots, obviously. The threes have dropped from 3 down to 2.1 over these last couple of weeks. A real, real struggle at the moment for Dame Lillard and for Damian Lillard owners. Mason Plumlee, 10-6-7, 2 steals and a block, so a nice performance from him. While Eddie Davis grabbed his 8 rebounds in 18 minutes. Yeah, let's look at the next game. The Los Angeles Lakers and the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers rested Austin Rivers, Wes Johnson, Jamal Crawford, and everyone else was able to rest during the game, because they didn't play many minutes. Now, Blake Griffin, there was up in the air whether he's going to play, whether he's going to not. He played 25 minutes, went 13-8-3, but he's going to sit out the next game on Friday for the Clippers. DeAndre Jordan went 15-11 with 4 blocks in his 27. Cole Aldrich, 18 minutes, you know what's going to happen next. Big numbers, 7-10, 2 steals, 2 blocks. Jordan's going to sit another game. Like the Thunder, the Clippers are locked in to their seeding. I think that Jordan definitely misses another game here down the stretch. And Aldridge will be great for DFS and as a stream option. Chrissy Paul, 13-5-8 in his 24 minutes. JJ Redick hit 3 threes for 15 points in 22 minutes. And the rest of the bench, just some extra run for guys. I like seeing CJ Wilcox get 25 minutes. He hit a couple of threes, had 3 steals. And like our Reggie Bullock we talked about with Detroit, he was an invisible player for the first couple of years of his career, but he's actually come on a little bit this year, and maybe there's something there, because look, this wing group is just terrible for this team. Paul Pierce, Jeff Green, Luke Marmute, Wes Johnson, these aren't good players. And Wilcox, maybe, you could argue he should have been given more playing time to try and develop into a guy who might be able to actually help at this point in the season. But maybe there's a little bit there from him. For the Lakers, it's terrible. Kobe, 17 points on 6 of 19 shooting. I don't know. I'm not a Lakers fan, so I don't know. But if you're a Lakers fan, is it brutal watching Kobe just miss shot after shot after shot after shot after shot? Like, how does it feel? To me, it's just like, Jesus, can this guy stop shooting? Jordan Clarkson, 13-2-2 with two steals. Decent night on a sore leg. Julius Randle, 7 points. He's a percentage killer at times. 3 of 11. He had 1 of 2 from the free throw line, but 20 rebounds. You're pretty happy with those numbers. While Tariq Black is a guy that I think has a tremendous potential. 17 minutes for Black, 11 and 5. I'd like to see more Black Randle starting front courts to see how these guys can work together. D'Angelo Russell, he struggled, 13-2-3 with a couple of triples, while Roy Hibbert went 4-2 in his 17 minutes. Not much else to talk about. And we talked about Meta World Peace having the leading the Lakers in scoring and it would never happen again. Well, he played 14 minutes here and did not score at all. In fact, did not register one single stat. So that is more the Meta World Peace that I'm aware of. And if he wants to play for 3 to 4 years in the NBA, I'm glad that teams will be really enjoying that sort of non-production. I guess that's the best way of putting it. We are done for the game reviews, guys. I'm going to take a quick break and then we're going to be back to preview Thursday's action from a DFS point of view. This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see. Most fantasy friendly of the group, and that is the Phoenix Suns and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are going to need to get that victory to try and get themselves more of a steady footing in the playoffs. The Rockets are favored by 11.5. The total is 214, so they'll be pretty happy with that sort of a matchup. The point guards, Ron Price is at 3600. He dropped 25 in the last game. I don't expect him to necessarily get 25, but he should be able to surpass 20. Yeah, Pat Beverley is a concern, but I think that you should be able to get 20 points out of Ronnie Price. I'm really okay if I want to spend 3,600 on him. Now, when we get through all these games, you'll see that when we get to the power forwards and center positions, there aren't many cheap options that I really like, so you've got to get your bargain players in at other positions, so Price becomes a really useful guy, I think. Pat Beverley's at 5,200. It's a great matchup for him because we've seen how bad the Suns are from a point guard point of view. But 5,200 is just really expensive. You might consider him. He's averaging 25 across the last three, but he hasn't been great. He's averaging 27 the last three times he's taken on Phoenix, which is a bit of an improvement, but I'd like to get 30 out of him if I could. I just don't have confidence in that happening. Jason Terry, Andrew Gadlock, not much to really write home about with those guys. The shooting guards, Jim Harden, let's lock him in, 10,900. Yes, he only had 38 today, but I think another 50 from him should be forthcoming. Devin Booker's at 6,900. He was massive in the last game, 45 points. But 6,900 is pretty damn expensive. I'm not all that interested in using him at that price. He's a tournament-only option. There is no cash gameplay for me with Devin Booker at that salary. Archie Goodwin, John Jenkins, they're out of consideration. Small forwards, PJ Tucker was brutally bad in the last one. He missed all of his shots for 10 points. He has been good prior to that, though, averaging 27 points across the last five. But now that he's at 5,200, or he's at 54 in the last game, it makes him more of a difficult proposition to use. Not horrible, especially going up against Houston, but not ideal. Trevor Ariza at 5,600. I do like Ariza in this matchup. Not a good spot for the Suns to be. In the last three times he's actually played against Phoenix, he's averaged 39 points per game in only 35 minutes. He's getting 40 minutes a game at the moment. So we could see a big Trevor Ariza game. He's not a cash reliable guy, but in a short slate, you might have to use him. But in a tournament, I'm definitely fine with it. Mick Beasley's at 53. He's not really giving you 53 worth of value. He's playing some more minutes and he's you know, over a point per minute, but he's not getting 27, 28 minutes on average. It's just not what he's doing. Now, KJ McDaniel started the last game. Don't think that, regardless of if he starts or not, we're not going to use him. And Corey Brewer just doesn't produce really anything at all. The power forwards, Alex Len at 5,700. I guess use him at your own peril. His last three games have yielded 14 points on average. 5,700 just still feels just a little bit expensive for Len, despite the Rockets bump that he's in line for. I would rather spend 600 less, take Mirza Teletovic, who's been more consistent, and he's averaging 32 across his last three. His five-game range has been between 39 and 26, so pretty good range there. At 5,100, absolutely fine with using Mirza. Clint Capela at 42, needs a bigger role. Donatas Montiunas, John Lua, no interest there. I wonder if we're going to see Terrence Jones again this year. I'd be shocked. He's terrible. At center, Dwight Howard, 6,500. A nice game from Dwight today, 32.7. That's okay at 6,500, but it's not awesome. But this is a nice spot for him taking on the Suns. Do you use him? You'd have to have some pretty big balls, I think, to do it. But it's not terrible. Tyson Chandler at 5,400. I like Tyson Chandler here. He's at 35 average across his last three. Rockets bump is significant. He only needs 25 points, and he's playing a shit ton of minutes. He could easily acquire that sort of playing time and an ability to get those sort of points. The next game is the Toronto Raptors and the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks are favored by 6. Actually, pretty good game this one. The total here is 200, so a couple of compelling games on Thursday night. We'll obviously talk about the Spurs Warriors one a little bit later. Let's look at the point guards in this one. Not sure I'm loving many of them. Kyle Lowry at 7,900 is interesting. He's averaging just a tick under 40 across his last three games against the Hawks. And the Hawks, for as good as their defense has been recently, their point guards have been able to put up big numbers against them. So that's something worth monitoring. Now, Lowry's probably a tournament play. He's not consistent at this point in time. Corey Joseph's at 3,800. I'm not interested there. Jeffy Teague at 68. Now, the Raptors have been great at shutting down point guards basically all season. Teague's been good, but I don't know if he's 6,800 good. Den Schroeder is at 3,900. He's really a flyer in a tournament. That's it. Shooting guards. Kyle Korver, 3,600. He's not even doing enough to get me excited, even at that salary. Normie Powell at 4,100. Maybe a tournament option only. No cash game spot for Powell. And DeMar DeRozan's at 8,100. I'm definitely fine with using DeMar. He's averaging 43 across his last three. Another 44 in the last game. 8,100. If you're looking to spend up, yeah, you could consider him. But again, this is not the spot where you necessarily have to spend up on shooting guards. Terrence Ross, Tim Hardaway, not sure there's much of a rationale to using either of those guys. Small forwards, Kent Bazemore at 4,900 was tremendous in the last game. Dropped 44. He's averaging 29 across his last five. It could go pear-shaped for Bazemore, but at 4,900, I think he's definitely worth the investment. Thabo has dropped right off, hasn't played 20 minutes in his last three games. Mike Scott, Jim Johnson, not going to be a factor. The power forwards. Paulie Millsap has been tremendous. He's at 8,500 though, and we know that the Raptors have had a history of really limiting what power forwards can do. In fact, the last three times that Millsap has played them, he has averaged only 28 points, and at 8,500, it is a concern. So he's probably someone I tend to stay away from him, but you could look at him and go, look, he's just been white hot, so maybe something good happens. Maybe tournament. Luis Scola, Pat. Yeah, Pat Patterson at 40,000, that's a lot of money. At 4,000, I could maybe think it's a good investment. I probably wouldn't, but there's not a lot else to like there. Centers. Jonas Valanciunas has been playing tremendously well. He's averaging 34 across his last three, but he just seems to be consistently priced too high. 6,200 feels like it's maybe that's right on where he can get to, but it doesn't really take into much consideration his downside. So he's not someone I'm interested in there. Al Horford is at 6,900. That feels just a little bit high for what Horford's been doing, considering he is averaging under 30 across his last five games. Bismack Biyombo, we're not going to be too worried about using him. The Chicago Bulls and the Miami Heat is the next game that's up. There is no spread release for this one yet. We've got Etwan Moore and Taj Gibson are both considered doubtful, while Hassan Whiteside missed practice with a thigh injury. He is questionable. Let's look at the point guards. The Heat ones, we start with them, and that's Goran Dragic, and he's taking on the Bulls. His last three against the Bulls are giving 35 points. He's at 3,600. No, he's not. He's not at 3,600. He's at 6,700. And this is an awesome opportunity for him to put up a huge game. I really like Dragic here. Derrick Rose, on the other hand, don't like him at 6,400. He came back, played 35 minutes in the last game, put up 27 points. It's a tough defense to battle. Not for me. Obviously, Aaron Brooks is not someone we're going to be looking at. Shooting guard, Dwayne Wade at 7,500. Probably not, but Wade and Chicago, he tends to play pretty well against Chicago, although recently hasn't been awesome. Averaging 34 across his last three against this team. That's not terrible. I'll put it this way. I would use Dwayne Wade over Jim Butler. Butler's at 8,500. He's been up and down. He struggled his last three games against Miami. A putrid 12 points in the last one. He also had a 70-point game in his last five, but he's been very up and down. You might look at him in a tournament, but that's probably it. Joshy Richardson, as good as he's been, it doesn't translate to DFS all that well, so he's out. Gerald Green, he's not playing anymore, and Justin Holiday is not a DFS option. At small forward, Nikola Mirotic is at 5,300. It's a bad matchup. The Heat is good against small forwards and power forwards. He has been just really, really good. Another 36 in the last game. He's averaging 31 across his last five. I feel relatively confident about using him. Not super confident, but relatively confident. Joe Johnson at 4,900, not really approaching that sort of level, but he has played well against the Bulls, so he becomes a tournament option to me. And maybe a cash option, but not really. Justice Winslow, Doug McDermott, Mike Dunleavy, they're not guys who I think are really in a prime spot. Bob Portis is at 3,700. He'll likely start again with Taj out. Dropped 26 in the last game, but that still makes his average over the last five 11. It's obviously not very good. Is he worth looking at in a tournament at 3,700? Yeah, but he's starting. Doesn't mean he gets 20 minutes, though, so I'm not all that keen. Luol Deng at 6,300. Revenge game, and he plays the Bulls, and he's going to play in the front court. Everything adds up to Luol Deng being able to score 35 points here. It might not happen, and he hasn't been super lately, but this situation really screams out that I want to use Luol Deng. Amari Stoudemire, look, he'll get more minutes with if Whiteside happens to miss, and then I'd become a little bit more interested at minimum salary, and I might want to look at him as maybe that guy to use, but if Whiteside's playing, then no thanks. Speaking of the centres, my screen's died on me. Let's bring that back up. Let's try that again. That was a great little segue. Speaking of the centres, Pau Gasol, 8,400. He's been good against Miami. He's averaged 41 the last three. He's averaged 42 the last three games against all opponents. 8,400, I think that Pau is a pretty good play. Hassan Whiteside at 8,600. He plays the Bulls. There's a benefit. But we need to know that he's going to play first. You feel like you can get 40 points out of Whiteside basically every night. So I feel if he's fine, he's ready to go, I would take him over Gasol. But they're both, I think, pretty decent options. Minnesota and Sacramento. The high-flying Timberwolves, not favorites. The Kings are favored by 4.5. The total is a whopping 221 points. Let's look at the point guards. I like Rick Rubio. He's at 6,700. He had a down game against the Warriors, but now he gets to bounce back against Rajon Rondo. His salary has dropped by $200. He's been a 34-point guy against the Kings the last three times out. I think that he's a fine guy to get over 30 points here. I like Rondo as well. He's at 7,900. He's the last three times he's played the Timberwolves, he's averaged 46 points. And at 7,900, I'm absolutely all in on Rondo getting 40 points here. I think there's a big chance that he doesn't. Daz Collison, he missed the last game. He's at 5,800. I don't mind using him at 5,800. He's averaging 29 across the last five. And I think that he's going to be in a spot where Marco Bellinelli doesn't play. He'll play some two as well. So I think that Collison's an okay option, but definitely not awesome. At shooting guard, Seth Curry is at 4,200. He's averaged 28 points across the last three. And someone asked on Basketball Monster, why do we have his minutes projected so low for the rest of the season? It's because we don't know if Bellinelli's going to play. We didn't know We don't know if Caspi's coming back. So we've got to take all those factors into consideration. If those guys are out, then he's going to get 30 minutes, 27 minutes most of the time, and he's going to be a real useful player. But if Ballinelli returns and he gets his 15 minutes, it's got to come from somewhere. If Caspi comes back and gets his 20 minutes, it's got to come from somewhere. So these guys could lose, or guys like Seth Curry could lose their minutes. Anyway, 4,200 for Curry, I'm fine with using him in this one. Zach LaVine at 5,400, I think he's also a decent play. He's definitely a fair bit of risk associated with him, but he got back in business against the Warriors, dropped 35 there. It's not like the Kings are good, so maybe he could put up a decent night, but there is some significant risk associated with Zach LaVine. Ben McLemore's doing nothing, and Jim Anderson, despite starting and playing some big minutes, is producing nothing. Small forwards, you might be shocked that when I look at Andy Wiggins and I go, you know what, I actually like using Wiggins here. He's averaging 34 points across his last five. The matchup is incredibly tasty for Wigo against the Kings. His last three against them have yielded 38 points, 7,100. Lock me into being an Andrew Wiggins believer for this game. Rudy Gay is at 6,400. He had 40 points in the last game. He's an okay guy to look at. I'm not overly targeting him, but I think he's worth it. Shabazz Muhammad had 41 in the last game, and at 3,900, that's great. But it took a special set of circumstances for that to happen. So I would put him into a tournament at 3,900, but I would be very, very surprised if he actually had a decent game again. Nemanja Bjelica, Tayshaun Prince, obviously we're not getting too interested in those guys. The power forwards, Willie Cauley-Stein's at 5,000. It just feels too high. 4,500, absolutely fine with it. And with Cousins playing, if his ability to get 25 points, I'm not sold on it. Gorgui Dieng, he hasn't played, I think, 25 minutes in the last four games. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's Mitchell. Not using him. He's at 5,600. It's not happening. Quincy Acey, obviously, we're not getting involved there. At the center position, Carl Anthony Towns is priced at 8,900. Now, there is a bit of risk associated with using Carl Anthony Towns because he's facing off against DeMarcus Cousins. And that does happen, that opposition teams playing against DeMarcus Cousins, opposition centers, get into foul trouble real quick. So Towns is not someone for a cash game here. But in a tournament, he could go huge. He could put up 50, but there's a risk. The previous times he's played the Kings, he's averaging just 29 points. It's obviously well down from what he normally does. As for Boogie, he's at 10,700. I'm okay with using Boogie. 50-point average across his last three. His lowest score in his last five has been 43. I think he's a fine guy to use in there. The Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs is the next game. I don't really know what to think about this game. Apparently, the Spurs won't be sitting anyone, but again, the Thunder weren't sitting anyone today, and then everyone sat. So whether we can believe any of that, I've got no idea. The resting situation will affect what where value comes. Patty Mills at 3,500, he's been producing nothing, but the projections really like him here, so he'd be a real tournament punt option. Tone Parker, Steph Curry at 10,500. If you're looking to spend up at a point guard, he's going to be one of those guys who is in play, but there is always a risk of him not living up to it, or not living up to that huge salary, so he's more of a tournament play, not a great cash option. Shooting guard, don't like Klay Thompson here because of the way that the defense will be on him. He's at 7,100. He hasn't exceeded 35 points in his last five, and I don't imagine this to be the game that it happens. I don't mind Manu, though. He's at 3,900. He's averaging almost 20 points across his last five. I reckon he's a fine guy to use just to fill in some minimum salary. Dan Green at 3,700. He's giving us jack shit. Leandro Barbosa, Brandon Rush, Kevin Martin, Ian Clark, zero to like there. The small forwards, Kawhi is at 8,600. I reckon he's a pretty decent play here. Not the best, but I think he's a pretty okay guy to look at. I think that you can get 40 out of Kawhi and feel pretty comfortable about it. Harry Barnes is at 4,800, just a shithouse matchup going up against the Spurs. The last three times that Barnes has taken on the Spurs, he's averaged 10.8 points. And if you got 11 points here, that you'd have to consider it a win. Iguodala's back. He's at minimum salary, but I don't think we're going to be looking at him for a fantasy use. Power forwards, Dave West is at 3,600. He's averaging 21 across his last three, but no confidence in using him. LaMarcus Aldridge, terrible in the first game, great in the second game. What happens in the third one? At 8,300, I think you have to look at using him. He is averaging 43 across his last five. Not so great against the Warriors. He's an okay guy to look at, but definitely not super valuable. Draymond at 9,000. I'm more involved in Draymond here. I think that Draymond can get to 45 and feel pretty comfortable about doing it. And the centers, we don't know what's going to happen. Does Tim Duncan sit? Does he play off the bench? Does he play 5 minutes? Really hard to invest. You could say the same for Andrew Bogut. Really hard to invest in Duncan or Bogut. And Festus Ezeli and Boba Marjanovic might play 5 minutes between them. The center position in this game feels like an absolutely complete, total and utter write-off. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day now. At point guard, Ron Price, 3,600. Goran Dragic, 67, and Rajon Rondo, 79. At shooting guard, Seth Curry, 42. Zach LaVine, 54, and Jim Harden, 10,900. The small forwards, Kent Bazemore, 49. Wigo at 7,100, and Kawhi at 8,600. The power forwards, don't like a cheap power forward. Mirza Teletovic, 51, and Draymond at 9,000. And the centers, don't like any cheap centers, apart from Amari, if Hassan Whiteside doesn't play. Tyson Chandler at 54, and Karl Anthony Towns at 8,900, with that risk associated with DeMarcus Cousins and the foul trouble that could come his way. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at redrock_bball and checking out Basketball Monster's Twitter account, which is at BaskMonster, for all of the up-to-date, late-breaking news as we change our projections as they happen. You'll see that news tweeted out on that Twitter account as soon as humanly possible. Don't forget, get at me with your thoughts about Sam Hinkie. Tell me what you thought about the move and the whole thing in Philadelphia. Let me know what you think. If you get a chance, leave a review for this podcast on iTunes. Give it a thumbs up on YouTube. Subscribe on both places. It would be awesome if you could do that. We are done, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.